welcome back to an exciting episode of Extra Features. Today we have a fabulous film called Summer of 67. And today we're going to approach things a little bit differently. I want to get into the origins of this film because I think there's a good story in there, at least I'm hoping. Welcome to the show today. We have Sharon Wilhelm. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start right at the beginning. My first question, what was your upbringing like? Because I think that has a definite relevance to your show, your movies.
Actually, I grew up, so you're talking about me as a filmmaker or me as the story?
I think you're the story. I don't know, though.
Well, as far as the story, you know, Summer of 67 is based on a family, you know, story. When I was growing up, I didn't know a whole lot. I mean, my dad was in the Navy when I was a baby. And so it didn't really, you know, I wasn't in the military or, you know, anything, but I knew that something happened to Daddy when I, you know, when he was in the Navy. He didn't talk about it much. I just knew something bad happened. And then as I got older, and I started to listen to the story more and found out about the USS Forrestal fire. And I really thought it was just some kind of obscure piece of history that nobody else knew about. I had no idea that the Forrestal fire was a significant historical event that many other people knew about.
So was that the origin of your writing? Is that where it came from, or this came later, your writing?
Well, that's just this particular story. Growing up, I liked telling stories, but I was a reader. I was not... almost everybody else I know that makes movies, they dreamed of making movies. That was not me at all. I was, I wanted to write books. I liked reading books. Then I married a man that I knew he had a degree in film, but when we married, he wasn't doing anything with it. He was just a businessman. And it wasn't until we'd been married for 10 years that he decided he wanted to make a movie. And so it was completely foreign to me. I had never even watched that many movies, much less made one before.
Wow. So hold on. You went into movie making and you, A, you've just told me you don't want to make a movie or weren't really into that thing. And you haven't watched that many movies. So let's start there. Why haven't you seen that much film?
I don't know. I mean, we lived in a decent sized town, but we had one theater. We just didn't go to it. I can remember growing up, I went to see Freaky Friday. I went to see a couple of other Disney movies. We went to go see Jaws because it was filmed in Destin, where I lived. We watched, like, TV movies, but I don't know. Growing up, we just didn't watch movies, and I just didn't give them any thought until I started making them, and I had done, like, theatrical drama. I had written journalistic. But filmmaking is a lot different than, you know, books and theatrical. And so, yeah, it was quite an adjustment.
So let's start there. So how long did it take you to write your script then? Because you've never written a film script then, obviously.
The first one, which was quite a number of years ago, it started off, my husband was making a documentary about our small town. We had just moved to the historic town, and he said, you know, it'd be really cool to make a documentary about the history of the different homes and everything. And I said, yeah, that sounds great. You know, you have fun with that. And somehow along, as he was doing the research, he's like, this would make a really good film, turn it into a narrative story. And he's like, oh, you can write the script, and you've got directing experience, so you can direct it, and you can go ahead and star in it, too, because you've always liked acting, and yeah. I have no idea how long it took me to write that, because he was already doing the research and everything, and then I just kind of was taking his documentary and turning it into a narrative film, and we were literally, like, rewriting it as we were filming it, because we didn't know what we were doing.
So how many films before Summer 67 is that first film?
We've done 7 altogether.
Okay. So when you've hit Summer 67, you're well on the go. You know what you're doing.
You know, As well as we're going to, yes.
Is this your first period piece?
We did. Our last one, Providence, was somewhat period. It started where a couple met each other as children in the 70s, and then they were teenagers in the late 80s, and then we went to modern time when they finally got together. It was a love story that took 40 years to take place.
That's a long wait.
It was kind of period, but it was only a portion of it that was period.
So what drew you to the period piece of Summer 67 then? What was the juices flowing? I don't know what I'm looking for here. What drew you to this period?
We live in an old house. We've been in the antiques business for many years, so we love period. And honestly, I felt like it was easier for me to tell a period story than a modern story because I just am more old-fashioned. I feel like, you know, our house is Victorian and, you know, we just understand the period. So it was kind of intriguing to us to try to see, could we pull off, you know, this period. 60s, we felt like that was probably the easiest period for us to pull off. You know, you go too old, it gets very difficult. My husband loves old cars. So he already had a 60s T-Bird. And so we were just kind of looking with the resources that we had.
Because your film is like, feels very authentic. So is that all antiques you've had in your store, or you borrowed, or how did that all come about?
We spent a year, we were touring, going to film festivals with our past movies. So we were traveling, you know, around the country with that. We started shopping. From the time I started writing the script, we started shopping. We love an excuse to go to estate sales and antique malls and thrift stores and all that. So we just started everywhere we went. We were just looking for 60s things and had a wonderful time. It was a lot of fun because there's all these things that are so hideously ugly that was, you know, nobody in their right mind would want it. And we're like, oh, we love that. We got to have that. And then, of course, we were explaining to everybody we're doing a movie, so it was a great conversation. Our favorite thing, we really wanted a really tacky gold velvet-type couch. And we just had this vision, and we couldn't find it. And one day, we were just driving down the street, going to lunch on a Sunday, and there was this chair by the side of the road, and we're like, oh my goodness, that's exactly what we've been looking for. And so we're like, okay, here's this free chair. We took it. We're like, it sure would be nice if we had the matching couch. 2 days later, we're driving down the same street and there is the couch.
Oh my God. So, that's cool.
We were pretty excited about that. And I'm sure the people that we took it from were like, why on earth would anybody want that couch and chair?
Okay. So now I have to ask, you've picked up your chair and couch. You fell on the side of the road. You've shot your film. It's done. Did you put it back on the side of the road?
We actually sold it for pretty good money.
Awesome. Now that's a good story.
Yeah, it was kind of neat. We had one of the guy that plays the military chaplain at the end, he is a local radio host, has a big, big following locally. And so this was his first movie that he had ever been in. We had just asked him. And so for the whole year from the time we first asked him, he filmed and all that, he had been promoting the movie on his radio show. And so we had told him at some point it just came out that we were going to sell a lot of our props because we didn't have any need for all this 60s stuff. And so he promoted it on his show and we sold tons and tons of all the tacky stuff that we had accumulated.
That's awesome. Well, that answers one of my questions. I thought your wedding scene, so you've obviously created characters. Let's start there, maybe before we get to the wedding scene. Where did your characters come from?
I wanted to show the effects of the war from the different angles, showing how, you know, I didn't want to just show one person's story of how they interacted. And so, you know, I wanted to show a wife and mother who was, you know, very devoted to her husband. I wanted the high school girl who's kind of torn between the peace and the love. And then, you know, I wanted the maid story where she meets this guy and immediately he set off, I wanted the mother's story. And so I just tried to create, you know, these characters that would represent all the different emotions that you would find with the war.
Okay, so I want to start there. Okay, I found the maid. I wish I had a little bit more background with her. Was there more to her, or just you felt to stay with the main two characters and slip her in a bit here and there?
You know, I originally just saw her as just a small character, just as kind of a little B, you know, subplot. But we've had so many people that have said, I really wish we had more of that couple. I really like them. I wanted more of their story.
I'm with you. I'm totally with those people.
It didn't occur to me, you know, she was just supposed to be a minor character. But Sharon is such an incredible, and Gerald, they were just so amazing actors. And they just took those roles, and people have just fallen in love with the two of them.
They have nice chemistry.
They did. They really did.
I mean, nothing against the other people in the film. I really felt their chemistry was perfect. It worked for me.
What was really amazing is that she's considerably older than him, and she has been in a ton of mostly TV work. She's done a very experienced, you know, actress, and this was his first film role. So he really held his own with her.
So you got your main lead, and I mean, she does do a change. Now, I want to go about the nagging mother-in-law.
Yes.
Where does that character come from? Is that a personal experience, or is that somebody you know?
She was inspired, yes, by somebody I know, not my mother-in-law.
No, I understand. That's why I was trying to be gentle.
Yes, and she's not actually exaggerated.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I thought it would be fun. I mean, you know, obviously it's fictionalized, but, you know, like with the TV, you know, how extreme that is. But, and I also wanted, though, I wanted her to not just be this obsessed woman, but I wanted to show that she really does love her son in her own way. She's just watching out for her baby, you know?
Okay. I just want to draw the attention to one scene that really irked me. When the wife makes the cookies for her husband.
Yes.
And the mother goes, nope, those aren't right, and throws them out. I would have clocked her. I would have seriously clocked her at that moment.
I have a real life story of a similar story that happened. I won't share it, but it was actually more extreme with that. And the daughter handled it very well.
Wow, I was pissed. Like, what are you doing?
I know.
So the cars in the film, I wrote down very nice cars. So those are all your husband's cars?
No. Actually, the only ones we owned were the T-Bird and the bus. He purchased the bus. It did not run when we got it, so he spent like 3 months getting it to run. The inside was really bad, but the outside actually had a new paint job and everything. So he spent all this time doing all these things to make it look old. And our neighbors would walk by and observe the process of turning it into the hippie van. The others were just local car show, all the different car groups, because we have a lot of connections because we use old cars in all of our movies just because they're great.
That's great. I think that's awesome. So where'd your music come from? Like, you have some instrumental music. You have an anti-war song.
All the Vietnam-type songs, all those were all written by my husband. He wrote them, and then we had different – I mean, we're in Nashville, so we have plenty of options of very talented friends. So he had some of them that recorded them. We had some other people that he knew – that recorded original music, and then the rest of it we use from Audio Network, which is a wonderful resource of licensed music. And then he's the one that really put it together. We spent many hours. In the past, we've had a traditional composer, but we wanted something that we wanted to sound very authentic 60s rather than more contemporary. So we worked really hard to try to get music that sounded authentic.
And I do have one small complaint, just because I do this for my real job. Your mailman is totally wrong.
You know, we had a hard time finding some of the props. And so, yeah, that was the best that we could do.
I was making fun of him. That's just my real job. So I was just like, nope, that's not right. That's not going to cut it. It's kind of like those people who watch medical shows and can't do it. Yeah. That's my issue. I'm like, nope, not right.
Well, the funniest thing is when we were filming the mail scenes, our mailman actually happened to be walking. Our mailman, we live in a historic district, so the mailman delivers the, you know, mail by foot. And so he came by to see what we were doing with this other mailman, and they just had a nice bonding moment.
Oh, that's funny.
Mailman to mailman.
So where did you find your locations? Because I find that's always hard for shoots and things, finding the right church, the right house, the right room.
Well, we film in our small town. We are very, very blessed. We have a lot of resources in our historic district. The hardest thing we found was the two churches, because most churches now have the projectors and screens and all this technology, and we couldn't have any of that. And so we needed somewhere that, you know, time had not hit. We got the first church, and then the second church, Ruby May and Reggie's, we had a really hard time finding their particular church, because I wanted one with red carpet and paneling. I wanted it to have, you know, a very traditional feel, and everywhere we would go in, and it was just so modern, and it was like, no, this isn't right. And then we were excited because the church was excited about it, and a lot of their church members got to be in the scene. So that was fun for them.
Well, there you go. I guess my other question is, I always want to ask, I mean, you've done this 7 times. That was your 7th film. Do you find you use the same catering company? Do you feed the people the same way, or do you change it up?
I feed everybody myself. I literally, I'm like the only filmmaker I know, but I do crock pot and frozen meals. And then we'll have like one of our PAs that'll pop the, you know, food in the oven at the right time. But I have everything prepared. And so occasionally when we're filming somewhere where we don't have access, you know, where I can't do it, then we'll bring in barbecue or something like that. But no, that's just one of the things I do is I feed everybody.
Hold on. Let's back. How long is your prep time for this then?
See, because Fred and I work together as a team, and I'm very, very, very organized. So, I mean, we have our schedule. I mean, I have it, the schedule is down to the minute. And we've never gone over like 15 minutes past time, except for the funeral scene when the hearse broke down on the way there.
Nice.
But, normally, you know, I've got it down. We're filming in places where, you know, I can set up, and I don't know. This is just what we do. We've always done it that way. It saves an incredible amount of money. The actors like it because it's nice and homey. You know, they're not eating the same things. And so I really try to take care of them.
That's awesome. I think that's wonderful. I guess my next question is, did you use a drone shot at any time? Or
yes.
A helicopter shot?
We did the drone. We did with where the car and the van were driving.
Yes.
Out in the middle of the country. And then also at the cemetery.
That's
our next
door
neighbor is a drone operator.
Okay, I made note of that. Did you use a drone shot or a helicopter? So that was one of my questions. Now, at the end of your film, you do a postscript.
Mm-hmm.
Now, was that hard to write? Because, I mean, you do have a lot of information there for the viewer of your film.
We kind of added that just, well, honestly, the reason we originally added it was because we were submitting to a film festival that required the film to be a certain length, and we weren't quite there.
Uh-huh.
So that was our original. But then we started working on it. We're like, this really adds to it because people need to know the story behind the movie, and we found that people do really appreciate reading that and learning it, you know, especially that John McCain was on the Forrestal. They're always kind of surprised by that. And the fact that just this local actor happened to be on the Forrestal.
So I guess my next question is, what's your film directed to? What's your audience? I mean, I consider it somewhat of a faith-based film. Am I off wrong there?
No, you know.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
No, I mean, we are Christian filmmakers, so it's going to come through. Okay. You know, this is our Christian worldview, but at the same time, we were not making it for the church.
That's what I was wondering. Good.
Primarily, it has been for veterans. It has been, and their wives. They watch it, and it's like, I mean, it's sad. It's a sad movie, but at the same time, it gets them talking and, you know, them saying, thank you for telling our story, for bringing it out. Because so often, like, war movies are so war, you know, yep. All the violence, and this isn't, and this is showing what the wives went through, and, you know, showing the sacrifices that our military families make. So really, veterans and military of all ages is our target.
So when we've talked in the past, before we set up this interview, you were always saying, I have to screen the film. I got to do this, which is great. So people are seeing your film.
Right.
Where are you showing your film? Is it a film festival? Is it a church? Is it a legion?
We released theatrically the last weekend in June. And showed for 2 weeks in Nashville at the Regal Theater there. We had a week at a theater in Evansville. We have done film festivals all over the country. We were going to do the Forrest Hall reunion and the hurricane hit. We were at a Western convention. We've been at churches. We've been at community events. It's just wherever anybody's wanting to show the movie, and we've gone to a lot. We personally go to at least half of them. We're personally there.
That's awesome. So that's really all my questions about your film, but I do have some fun questions.
Okay.
Your favorite piece of antique furniture you've ever sold?
That we've ever sold? We've had a lot. Probably the most fun is when we were in the antiques business, our daughter was very young and she wanted to be in the antiques business too. So one day we were at an antique store and she bought this little Ziploc bag. It was in a, just this case, and it was a Ziploc bag and it literally said $3 bag of stuff, and she bought it. And then when we got it home and started investigating, there was a pocket mirror and it had a blimp on it. And it ended up selling. It turned out it was a very rare, valuable pocket mirror and it sold for $300-something.
Nice.
And it was so cool that this, you know, 7-year-old kid bought this thing that some antique dealer saw as a bag of stuff.
That's a good story. I like that. Your favorite dinner to make for your crew?
I do Mexican a lot, so I create all kinds of, you know, whether it's chicken enchiladas or some kind of burritos. I make homemade salsa, which is a hit, so definitely some kind of Mexican.
Last question. I don't know. This might be a question for your husband, but because I want to have you, I'm going to ask you, your favorite old car?
I love, like, 50s and 60s cars. Now, he had a Kaiser, which is kind of a rare car that we had in Providence. It was very beautiful. It was turquoise, very pretty. I don't really like riding in old cars. I feel very conspicuous in them. I feel like everybody is staring at us. So I'm not a big fan of riding in them, but I like to look at them.
Okay. Well, tell everybody where you can find this great film.
We are currently available at Amazon Prime, Google Play, and YouTube Video. We will be releasing all over the place coming up. Our distributor will slowly be releasing it to others, so we should be on iTunes and the Roku channel, and I have no idea where all it will be, and it will be on DVD. And if they go to our website, they can see where we're, you know, having a screening coming up.
And one last thing before I let you go, are the rest of your films available on Amazon Prime too?
We've got one, the, The Good Book is available on Amazon Prime. It is actually a silent film. We have two silent films that we did that are kind of like long music videos. They're stories. They're not like silent as in the old-fashioned, you know, kind of black and white. It's more like a music video because we're in Nashville. We do music videos. And so they're feature films where the whole story is told without dialogue. Well, and it's on Amazon Prime.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you for your time. You were wonderful.
Well, thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page. Thank you.